89.9 Neighborhood Public Radio. That was Smog. Smog used to be good, but now, well, that's really your call. Live here on 88.9 Neighborhood Public Radio, my name is Zephyr, and you're listening to Frank Prattle. My extra triple special guest today, Natalie Jeremijanko. Did I say that right? It rolls so well together.
Yes, perfect.
What are some of the more inventive ways that people have said your last name? I'm always curious to hear this.
You know, I don't know. I don't listen to. I edit them out. I think the way my parents say it is Jeremijanko.
Really?
Natalka Jeremijanko.
Wow.
Yes, that's what you do when you're Ukrainian.
Are you Ukrainian?
Yes.
But I assume so, that it wouldn't just be, you know, I
guess. Yes, that's why I got the name.
Okay.
Yes.
Are you? You're not actually from the Ukraine, though, but that's your lineage.
My parents are migrants, and my mother tongue, my first language, was Ukrainian. And I went to Ukrainian school every Saturday. I mean, I can paint Easter eggs. I'm Ukrainian.
That's great.
But I'm Australian. Yes.
Okay. So now, when you say Australian, though, you mean Australian. You were born there.
Yes.
Whereabouts? Or is this getting too personal right off the bat?
I was born in sugarcane country in a really weird little town called Mackay, which has recently had a non-fiction put out about why there's been so many murders in this weird little town. It's the kind of violent mecca of Australia in Mackay.
I mean, when you talk about violence, I mean, we're pretty close to Oakland right now. So, I mean, would it compare to Oakland? Or is it more violent than Oakland?
Australian violence is entirely different.
Really?
Yeah, entirely different.
Tell me.
I mean, I don't have a... It's less predictable. I mean, stochastically, you've got... just less chance of it happening. And when it does happen, I don't, you know, I don't have a theory of Australian violence, but it's very different from American violence. It's like, you don't get, as a university professor, I don't fear for my life in Australia, whereas here, you know.
Occasionally you do.
In fact, I had sent to me recently by a graduate student a list of all the professors that have been killed by their graduate students.
You're like, thank you so much.
Anyway, I don't have a theory of violence in Australia, but I do know that it's different.
Okay, well, I'll take it at face value.
How do we get to that?
It's a good question. It's a long and twisted road.
Yeah.
So for the listening audience out there, I have with me, in addition to Natalie in person, but not on the telephone, as other interviews have been today, which were some delicious ones, so she has brought with her some pretty amazing stuff. The first item I'm looking at right now, do you want to talk about this or this?
This is an adjunct to that.
All right.
Let's
start with the white mask with the red X on it. Or is that not what you want to start with? I mean,
when
I would
you describe it like that, aid for radio. It doesn't. What you're looking at is actually a special edition of the Clear Skies One Tree's face mask that I've done for the San Francisco World's Fair,
where we are today.
Exactly. And this edition, I've been standing out in the cold in Warm Water Cove. In editioning these for various people.
So to be more descriptive, because it is radio, I mean, you know, fuck it, we're not on TV, you know? It's a mask that looks similar, I would say, to if you've ever kind of refinished a hardwood floor.
Right.
Or chipped off paint off a wall.
It is exactly this. Two versions of it. It's a standard OSHA-approved N95 particulate matter mask that has been adapted and upgraded with... Hold on a second.
with a special feature.
I have the other edition. What's been added is a grayscale, a visual grayscale that photographers use or other production specialists. And by combining the grayscale, in this case, with the words clear skies, question mark, we produced the clear skies mask. The grayscale allows you to, as you're wearing this around, riding your bike or walking through San Francisco, to measure or to see the grime that accumulates on the mask that would otherwise lodge in your pretty pink lungs. And then you can actually compare it to the grayscale and the gradations to measure your rate of accumulation. It becomes a robust measure of particulate matter loading and air quality in the local area.
So it's almost a wearable pollution gauge.
Exactly. Inexpensive and allows us to widely distribute and think about, well, air quality issues. And it comes up particularly because the dismantlement of the Clean Air Act is called the Clear Skies Initiative.
So clever. I love those boys. The boys up there, they've got the ideas.
It is. It's like this double speak, right? It's this Orwell described it a while ago. And it...
Wait. I've got an idea. What? Let's dismantle the entire Environmental Protection Agency protecting air, but we're going to call it something that sounds like we're protecting it. Excellent.
Yes.
But I wonder if those conversations ever happen or if it's all just wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You know what I mean? But if they just pass it on the desk and they're like, oh, this is good. Give this to George.
Yeah. Speculating about how it happens is what to do about it is the end I spend time thinking about, because what does one do? I mean, when slogans have failed, political art used to be about, you know, sloganeering and, you know, imagine peace.
Right.
Was a catch cry for, but now you say imagine peace and then what, right?
Right.
You say stop Bush. Well, how, right?
Right. And then what?
Not say.
Yes. Yeah, stop Bush so Cheney can take control.
Right, exactly. So I think right now we're looking for different representations or representational strategies that can take us out of the morass of slogan versus slogan, because essentially we've been out-sloganed. You know.
Can I quote you on that?
I hope I give you some better quotes than that.
Oh, no, don't. We're at the beginning. You're getting good.
Okay.
So anyway, back to your mask.
The mask. So the mask is not only a fairly robust, stochastic kind of catch-all measure of particulate matter, it's also a display, right? And so on the display, well, you know, it covers your mouth. It's a speech bubble. It's an opportunity, a micro-propaganda opportunity to speak without talking. And when I issued an edition of these in the Republican National Convention in New York, I invited people, as I did today, to annotate the masks with micro-propaganda. This one was my favorite, which I'm showing to you, and I'll tell the audience, says simply, Bush smells. When that's on
what, and with an exclamation point.
Yes.
Bush smells!
That's right. When it's on a face mask.
Which kind of has a double meaning in there, too.
Yes.
I like that.
And interesting. And very direct. But nonetheless, it combines the slogan with the actual material evidence of air quality that I would argue allows people to have an opinion, to have some evidence, and with that evidence to participate in the political processes and the discussions around these very material political decisions that affect all of us and around which most of us have nothing to say.
Right. Right?
How else? What do we say about it? So down at Warm Water Cove in this area, actually, it's probably, according to some reports, the worst air quality in the entire West Coast.
Are you shitting me? I mean, I'm sorry to be so blunt, but this is... Are you serious that this is one of the worst air quality?
Well, you know, with the a cement plant, being proximal to a cement plant is like, smoking about four packets of cigarettes a day.
Are you serious?
You know, there's the industrial facilities just all concentrated around this area. I can show you a few reports. I'm opening up my big, fat, white folder of all this, the
these are
papers.
The facts.
Well, these are some interpretations of the issues we're facing. The contaminants include, of course, ozone, persistent organic pollutants, mercury, lead, zinc, cadmium, carbon dioxide, methane, and a whole range of fine particles, which have, amongst other things, visibility concerns. I could go on. There's a great chemical soup that we inhabit down here.
Right.
And this is one way to look at it.
For the listening public as well, I mean, if you think that, you know, you don't happen to know where a cement factory near you happens to be, there's one maybe a block, two blocks from 20th and 3rd Street where we happen to be right now.
Right. I think we can see it.
Right.
Through that window there. Yeah.
Right. So...
And if the listening public wanted to check that, they could just enter their zip code into scorecard.org and have a look at all the major pollutants in their polluters in their area.
Okay.
FYI. So we could do that right here. Are we online? We could show you. I could. You're cynical about this claim I'm making.
I'm not cynical, but I'm shocked. I mean.
Well, you know, it's part of a. I spent a lot of time doing this for around the San Francisco Bay Area because the One Trees Clear Skies mask is part of an issue for. Are you on scorecard.org?
We're getting there. I'm not that fast.
Okay.
Next year. Okay, so for everybody listening, we're on scorecard.org, which I would recommend you get on your handy computer that I know you have out at your fingertips. And what, 104301? 103. Jesus, I can't remember my... 103. All right, see, that's what I'm talking about. If you can't remember your own zip code, never mind. You don't need to be on the computer. All right. Toxic chemicals released by factories, power plants, and other industrial complexes. See how... Okay, so I'm clicking. It appears that we are in the high 90s.
Of the dirtiest, worst counties in the U.S., in carbon monoxide emissions, the top.
Oh, shit.
Nitrogen oxides emissions, the top. PM2.5 emissions, the top. PM10 emissions, the top. You know what? Sulfur dioxide emissions, the top. VOC is the most common urban pollutant. We're not quite the top.
and
second top.
To be frank, we are, as Natalie is saying kind of in longhand, we are one of the dirtiest places in the world for air quality.
Now you believe me?
I do believe you. Although this propaganda website, I don't know. So
all right.
you've got some more folders that you're pulling out stuff from.
I was going to give you another view of the San Francisco Bay Area from the point of view of the One Trees Project. So the One Trees Project is not one trees. It's 100 trees that are genetically identical and planted in pairs throughout the San Francisco Bay Area. So because they're genetically identical... Over the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years, they will render the environmental differences to which they're exposed.
So just to clarify real quick, this is part of the same project, but a different branch of it.
Hmm.
No. Different project altogether.
No.
Okay.
The One Trees Project is this massive distributed biomonitoring instrument that I started in 1999. Planted all these trees, micropropagated these 6,000 genetically... identical trees.
There's 6,000 of them.
It was originally 6,000 micropropagated from effectively the stem cells of this particular paradox tree, which is the adventitious tissue, the undifferentiated juvenile tissue, micropropagated to produce 6,000 clones.
Okay.
And now those clones have been planted in pairs in different microclimates throughout the Bay Area. And so give us an instrument because how they reveal or change or accumulate the environmental and social differences to which they're exposed gives us an instrument with which to understand local climate and climate change over space and time.
Right.
So that's a big project in which you might call it an uncontrolled experiment as opposed to a controlled experiment, because there's so many parameters involved. It's very useful for understanding complex environmental changes that we're living in and through, because trees, and these paradox trees, which are themselves really quite adorable organisms, but trees have the capacity of staying very still.
Very still. Almost still. As still as rocks, but not quite.
Yeah, not quite, in fact.
Rocks
they
win.
Are very dynamic organisms, and as opposed to us, you know, if what you're exposed to, you have all sorts of, well, according to the last CDC body burden studies, you have all of the 300 industrial contaminants they measured for in 4,000 random people.
Although, I quit smoking 2 years ago. I mean, that's worth a handshake.
Congratulations. But now you live next to a cement plant. What are you may as well smoke.
Well, fuck it.
This is interesting because trees, of course, accumulate these industrial pollutants, and you know, like we do. But you know, to try and understand you, we don't know whether you're exposed in childhood or when you were last in New York or at work or at home. You move around too much. You know, we don't know where you get this stuff from. Trees stay determinedly kind of still in the same place.
Hopefully.
Well, yeah. So they provide an interesting reference point for you and I to understand.
So let me briefly paraphrase to see if I got it right. And you can please jump in and correct me if I have it wrong, because I'm notoriously bad listener.
Okay.
You have taken upwards of 6,000 trees and, as close as humanly possible, made the same seed tree to plant.
No. He's a terrible listener.
Good. See?
No, there's sexual reproduction and there's asexual reproduction.
Okay.
Seeds are about sexual stuff.
Clones.
Clones. No, these are, in fact, a wonderful plant tissue culturalist. Peter Viss did the propagation, the micropropagation to produce this.
Okay.
These genetically identical trees.
Right.
These genetically identical trees were at first, for the first 2.5 years, raised in identical environmental conditions.
Right. So they're as close to the same tree as we can get.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you've taken them and put them in different places all over the city and elsewhere to measure the effects of pollutants on them.
Well, to accumulate and to display in their growth responses the complex environmental variables to which they're exposed.
Right.
Which is not only pollutants, it's, you know, temperature differentials. And understanding climate change, if it's something that I think many people are now anxious about quite suddenly. I think it's important to understand the global circulation models in which we understand global warming through are based on models that have about a cell size, a pixel size, that's about the size of Kansas. Right, so they're good for understanding global circulation, but for understanding local climate change and mitigation strategies and effects that we can have in a local climate requires a little bit higher resolution. So this is an instrument that allows us to think about, you know, in situ, the complex, many parameter, hopelessly kind of important and interesting problem of local climate change.
Right. Which some, you know, some out there still deny exists at all.
They do?
Yeah. What, in our own government?
Yeah.
What? Well, the U.S. government? Are you a U.S. citizen or Australian?
No,
still?
I'm not a U.S. citizen. I'm an Australian.
That's good.
You know, you have to become, to naturalize, you have to sign this thing saying that you will bear arms for the country.
Really?
Yeah, you have never had to sign this, but...
Because it's just assumed I own 20 guns.
And I sit there and I said to the immigration attorney, what if I don't... Can I... You know, because I can be deported.
Do tasers count?
I don't know.
Like mace? You're like, I already carry mace.
it's an interesting thing. The immigration attorneys, two of them now, just looked at me and just said, just sign it. But anyway, it is actually interesting because, of course, I can be deported on a dime.
Don't say that on the air, Natalie.
No. Well, last night, in fact, we had a beautiful display because the installation today was actually, to introduce people to seeing air. Right? So through the masks, and in order to elaborate that, we actually tied flagging tape all down the street to the Warm Water Cove across the line. So we had these long 40-foot ribbons visualizing the wind flow. Did you see drive through last night?
I didn't. I'm sorry.
Well, it was beautiful. It was
really
gorgeous.
Did you take a picture for me?
I have a lot of pictures. I have a lot of documentation, but then the police decided it was absolutely important, urgent that they take it down, and they threatened to arrest me, et cetera. You see? And I explained to them the importance of being able to understand and see the boundary layer effects of urban air circulation, and
they explained to you the importance of taking it down immediately.
Yeah.
That's how Johnny Law works, I hear. Unfortunate, but true.
Mm-hmm. That was very sad.
So now tell me, and tell us, the listening audience as well, you have something else with you. And I have to say, you brought the best props of anyone today. Full marks.
Visual aids for the radio.
Yes.
Did I finish explaining the One Tree Project? So, no.
You're
asking about the branching. So, the One Tree's Clear Skies mask is an instrument to help look at the trees.
Right.
To understand the differences of air quality that they're exposed to. Because we can't see air quality, right? And so, it's a sub-project of the One Tree's project. But part of a repertoire of projects that I have to understand and reimagine our relationship to natural systems. So to frame this kind of body of work and a lot of other interesting practitioners, for instance, the Backup Brigade or other people who are looking at how to represent these complex environmental phenomena, what I held at Warm Water Cove today was clinic hours for the Environmental Health Clinic. And the Environmental Health Clinic is a health clinic I've recently opened. I have a clinic now in New York and one in San Diego, and then held office hours today at Warm Water Cove. It's modeled on a health clinic, and it's like a health clinic, but instead of, you bring your environmental health concerns as opposed to your health concerns, and you walk out after the consultation with a prescription not for pharmaceutical drugs, but a prescription for design interventions and data collection projects.
Green
prophylactics.
I can never say that word. Prophylaxis.
So these are things that people can do. And the people who attend the clinic or voluntarily come to the clinic, like health clinics, I mean, you've got to want to go there. They're not patients, they're impatients. These are people who are not prepared to wait like 30 years it takes for legislation to clean up the Hudson River, for instance. 30 years.
The flammable river.
PCBs. There's nothing controversial about how much that needed to be cleaned up, and yet it took 30 years to get an order to dredge it. I mean, that kind of legislative and market-based changes... there's a few people who are a little more impatient than that. Moreover, documents like rousing documents like Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth, have you ever noticed how flaccid the what you can do screen is at the end?
Yeah.
Yes. change your light bulbs. Well, drive at the speed limit. Sign another petition. How many petitions can you sign?
Excellent. Excellent.
So the clinic is an institutional framework with which I can kind of coordinate and collect and analyze the data. And unlike medical information, of course, the environmental health clinic data is, of course, all open. And the primary advantage of addressing any environmental health concern is that the benefits go not only to you,
but to us.
But it's to the shared environmental inhabitants, right?
So we're going to help you whether you like it or not.
Yes. Well, and if you come to the and make an appointment at the health clinic, this is all by way of introducing these things that are not
so
fish.
So cool!
These are tadpoles. And tadpoles are wonderful creatures. They're here. Look how excited they are being introduced. They're squiggling around.
Hey, we're on the air. Get the remote mic.
Come on. They're actually sitting here because if you come, you may, in addition to being prescribed a One Tree's Clear Skies face mask, you may also be prescribed a tadpole if you're interested in water quality, for instance. Because tadpoles are, they're interesting in so much as they go through a very difficult adolescence that's almost as transformative as our own, right?
I would say more so, no?
Well, they go from your adolescence?
it was dark.
Mine was transformative. but as in so much as they have these, they're very, very sensitive biomonitors for this class of industrial pollutants we call endocrine disruptors.
Okay.
They interfere with hormonal developmental things. And so we see the kind of tremendous devastation of frog populations and frogs with extra limbs and all sorts of deformities that come from...
Frog freak shows,
yes. So if you're interested in water quality, a little setup like this, there's an addition of eastern bullfrog tadpoles that I just did for New York Water Quality, the New York Clinic for World Water Day, because, these are four of them. All of the tadpoles are actually named after officials in local government who make decisions that affect water quality and allow you to get to know not only the name of the head of the Department of Sanitation and the DEP and
on an intimate basis.
On a very intimate basis, but also to observe. So you could, in a setup like this, which is actually a Bodum coffee filter, where you have a phytoremediating plant in which you put a water sample through to see how the tadpoles grow and thrive in your local water quality. So you can sit it on your table instead of reading the back of the breakfast cereal box while you're eating breakfast. You can get to know your tadpole, and then they have a blog that you have to transcribe for them because they can't type. So,
but that doesn't mean, they're entirely without communication ability.
That's right.
I mean, they're fun at parties. Just because they don't blog doesn't mean they don't dance.
Well, you blog for them. You're making up for it. And they do actually have a great behavioral range. And it's the kind of veracity and attention to their behavioral complexities. I mean, how they're feeling, how active they are, how sensitive, how happy they are, how aggressive they're being, whether they're taking any notice of you or whether they're ignoring you. These kinds, you get to know and love your tadpole. And by reading and learning, this is what we call eco-literacy, the capacity to be able to understand the environment through the complex organisms that inhabit it. And so you could be prescribed a tadpole.
I wouldn't mind being prescribed a tadpole. In fact, I'd like to be.
Well, let's talk about it. We have to evaluate whether you're up to it.
All right. But so, just a quick description, ever so quickly, of what the actual thing is that she's talking about, which is so cool, is a coffee pot that has a top filter on it with a plant in it coming out the top, and then down into the kind of the hourglass beaker on the bottom, there are four tadpoles swimming in the water. And it looks so sci-fi yet green. It's very cool. So is there a website that the listening public can tune into to get more information?
Yes, the X-Design Environmental Health Clinic is at xdesign.nyu.edu/environmentalhealthclinic or xdesign.ucsd.edu/environmental health clinic. So my affiliations at UCSD and at NYU, just search for my name. If you can spell my name, you'll get there. I can tell you.
Well, thank you so much. This is Natalie Jeremijenko, and my name is Zephyr. You're listening to 88.9 FM. The show is called Frank Prattle, and you've definitely been my favorite guest today.
Well, that is an honor. Thank you, Zephyr. Cheers.
And this is Neighborhood Public Radio, signing off for the day.